You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 139.
139.
Can you believe it?
Odd number. I can't believe it. That's a lot of numbers. one times one is one. One times three is three. Three times three is nine. 139. That's perfect.
Sure.
Anyway, welcome everybody. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I'm joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And we have an amazing guest on the show. I don't ever want to besmirch my other guests when I welcome guests on the show, but I am super stoked that we can have James Hudson back on the show. How are you doing today, James?
What up, y'all? How are you doing?
We are good, and I think we finally thawed out from, you know, the
cold. Yeah, we had a beautiful day today. I got to do some pressure washing, by the way, is like the greatest home maintenance thing ever. It is so cathartic.
All right.
It's amazing. Anyway, so James, you have been doing a lot of so much stuff. Last time you were on the show was during the middle of the Grim Forest Kickstarter, which I think was only like 2 years ago, but it feels right. Like it was a million years ago.
It does. It does feel like a million years ago. Yes. It's been like 50 game designs ago, at least for me. But yeah, no, has it been that long? Wow.
Well, so you guys on Board Game Spotlight, you said it was it won a bunch of categories for you know, best like art or whatever of 2018. So technically, the game came out in 2018, which means that it would have been 2017 at the Kickstarter.
That's right. That's
it was exactly 100 episodes ago.
Are you serious?
It
All right, you are on episode 39, so that means you're going to be on episode 239. I hope that's okay.
Sure, we'll just make it a thing. We'll make
All right,
a thing.
Awesome! I love it.
we're actually up for a Golden Geek right now on BGG. So for artwork and presentation for the Grim Forest.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's awesome.
I hope you guys get it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna lie. Andrew Bosley just killed it with Everdale. Like it was really hard for me not to put it above our own game because it's just so gorgeous what he did with that game. But it actually is a big honor in like for me, the BGG Golden Geeks are just almost as good as a Kinderspiel, just because it's like this is the group of people that I play games with. Right. Like these are my peers. And so it has to be nominated by peers. So I'm pretty stoked to be in that listing.
Well, I mean, for now, congratulations for even being nominated, because like you said, that is awesome. And I mean, I don't know, Mr. Cuddington pretty much just. I just, you know, genuflect at their artwork and all the amazing things that they do. So
David and Lena are very special people. And I don't even really, they're so humble. They have no idea how talented they are. They could literally go into any industry and do whatever they wanted to do. They're that talented.
Right. They're amazing. And to see the breadth of the designs that they've come up with. And it's just astounding. It's really remarkable.
Yeah. It's like my funny story is, you know, we went back and we were looking at doing the Alice in Wonderland type game, which is now Wonderland's War that I'm doing with Manny, which is not with them. And they were like, hey, yeah, we're not interested in doing an Alice in Wonderland. And, you know, me, I'm sitting here going like, oh my God, I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Oh no. Oh, yeah. Oh, like a dagger in the heart.
But they came back and they're like, we really don't want, they had just finished up Brass Birmingham. And so they were like, we just don't really want to do any more assignments for a while. We want to make our own world. And especially David, like he has these little animated shorts that he's done. He does all kinds of stuff, super creative team. And they said, we want to make our own world. And I was like, cool. How about I strip the theme off two games and you guys just make me something. And they were like, really? And I was like, well, it's a bit of a gamble. that's normally something the publisher wants to control, right? We want to really control because we know where the markets are moving, where trends are going, things like that.
Of course.
But they're so talented. I was like, you guys could draw a circus tent and I would be in, you know? So they came up with Tidal Blades, and that's where the world of Tidal Blades came from.
Right.
That's so cool.
Which is mega cool. And now they've, you know, they've got that. So it's like the jewel in the cap kind of thing, or the feather in the cap, or the jewel in the crown kind of thing for them.
This one's Tidal Blades has become an kind of otherworldly. It got an insane response during the campaign to the point that we were like, cool, we'll do an RPG for you guys, because people were asking for ways to kind of get involved with the world. Mm-hmm. And then that spun into, well, we were just like, we'll do a one-off. We'll do like this little one-off adventure. I'll get Ivan Van Norman to come down and run it for us, because he's like the RPG king. He can just write us something up and just freestyle it. Then it became, well, no. We want, like, people were coming up to me at shows and saying, look, here's a character sheet I made in Fate, in the Fate RPG system. And my group runs a Tidal Blades thing that we made, that we homebrewed. I'm like, what?
The game's not even out yet. This is amazing. No,
right. And so then I asked Dave and Lena, I was like, hey, do we just want to make a full fledged RPG for this? And they were like, we can write it. So one of the things we're working on. We want to release a full fledged, full on RPG in the Tidal Blades world. So
that's cool. That's really, really cool.
Amongst the two tabletop games. So
mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I really would love to get back into RPGs. I just don't think I have the time.
Yeah,
I'm sure you can relate to that, right?
What's funny is I've only done a couple of RPGs ever. Like, I've done D&D twice. I've done a thing with Monty Cook recently. So I'm kind of RPG. I love it. I've really enjoyed every experience. But you're right. It just seems such a time sink.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those, you love it, but I also, like, you know, love my kids and need to parent them.
You want to play an RPG with your kids?
I do want to play an RPG with my kids. So you could actually, if you wanted to, I mean, I think Parker's probably old enough that you could probably rock a simple D&D with him. But you could check out something like Hero Kids. Like, Stella could totally handle that.
Have you guys ever checked out No Thank You Evil from Mind and Cook?
I am familiar with it, but I haven't.
Oh, it's so good.
Is that what you played before?
I have actually played that with the kids, and it kind of just, you know, disintegrated into like us doing make believe with their characters. But it was tons good. Of fun. Yeah. Tons of
yeah,
fun.
Yeah. And then there's stuff like Stuff Fables, which,
yeah,
oh, which for sure. Also. Yeah. I mean, I think we have everything in the Mice and Mystics universe. So I don't think I could pull the trigger on Stuff Fables right now. But I've heard excellent things about that. So I think the only way I'm going to be able to get the RPG stuff going is if I get the kids involved.
I was going to say, to take a vacation.
I don't do that.
I know.
Went to a board game store the other day, and I was actually there for some other event. But in the corner, I was like, there's a table full of kids. But they weren't playing a board game. And as I got closer, there was a mom, and she was running like an 8-person D&D group. And their other parents of the kids were like sitting around the outside. Like, some of them were on their phone, some were paying attention. But they had brought their kids to a D&D session at the board game store. It was amazing.
That's pretty awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
There is there's a Kickstarter out right now, and we're trying to get them on the show by Game to Grow for an RPG system called Critical Core. Have you heard about this?
I have not.
It is an RPG system that is designed to help like at-risk kids or like kids that are on the autism spectrum to like engage and work through all the social issues in a safer space.
Help them learn some of the social cues and emotional skills that they need in the real world.
Yeah. So that's awesome. Kind of a neat thing that's out there. Definitely you can check, you just Google Critical Core. I kept getting it confused with the whole Critical Role thing that's going on right now.
Oh, that's a good spot for them to be in.
Right.
Smart marketing.
Yeah. But that's another one. All right. Wow. We got like way off topic.
That's what happens with James.
That's what happens. So talk about some of the crazy stuff that's now going on with Skybound. So you guys wrapped up like maybe 6 weeks ago, you wrapped up the Valor and Villainy Kickstarter.
That's right. Yeah. Valor and Villainy was, it's our RPG. So that's, see, we're on topic. It was our tabletop RPG board game, essentially. And we wrapped that up, and we're currently in a production and balancing and play testing of that one. We're working on the project that will never die, which is Sorcerer City.
Yeah, what's like, going on with that?
It's just every hurdle that you could imagine. Oh, yeah. It's every week, it seems like the manufacturer comes back with, hey, here's another issue we found. And this happens, you know, sometimes when you're making stuff that doesn't exist. I think people just think, oh, this stuff's, you put in your order and they send it to you. And that's the way manufacturing works. This is not Amazon. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
It's, you know, it's just really, really tough because everything, it kind of makes these domino effects of like we get the tray set with the right sizes, and then we order the paper, and then 2 weeks later they come back and like, well, the manufacturer that we normally get our paper from came back and said that that type of paper is on back order. This is like the place that actually makes the paper, right? Like, right. So, you know, then you're like, cool, do we want to change the paper? Well, we could change the paper, but then that changes the weight, and we have to change all the trays, and you have to change everything. And you're like, well, or do we just wait 6 weeks till the paper comes in?
Right.
It, you know, there's these decisions that people don't – I mean, they have no perspective for them, so I don't expect them to understand, but then they also have no empathy for it, even if you did explain it.
Brutally, like, you're – your head's in your hands at your desk, stressed out, and even understands. I hear you.
But unfortunately, Sorcerer City is one of those that, like, it's just a very complicated project to make. There's 324 tiles, 50-millimeter tiles. It's enormous. And then we put this game trays in there. Like, if people were buying those aftermarket to add to their game, it'd be no issue. But to ship them in the box with, you know, 12 pounds of cardboard and metal coins, you're going to end up smashing it. So there's just a lot of things that you have to get just right to make things work. So we're working on that one in manufacturing. We've also got what else is we've got two games coming straight to retail. You've got the Grim Masquerade, which is a follow-up to the Grim Forest. It is not an expansion. It is a standalone social deduction card-driven strategy game. So I say it that way because it's not werewolf. It's not the emphasis is not on the social. It's more on the deduction card play. And so you're playing card. If you guys got it, I think you sampled it, but it's been a while.
Well, I don't think so.
Okay, maybe you
didn't. Because it's been a while. I watched the playthrough with Becca Scott.
I got you. Okay, so
I watched that, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean,
don't think you have though.
I watched a little bit.
Yeah.
You could totally bluff, and there's ways to do that, but you don't have to say anything. It's just by the way that you play your cards. So.
James is always Hansel. That's what I've learned.
Well, it's funny, when we were actually making this game, it was a Harry Potter game to start with.
Oh, yeah.
And when we were playtesting it at 2 years ago at the Druid City Games Retreat, I got Luna Lovegood, like, it had to be like 11 or 12 times in a row. and I would just start to saying every time, I was like, I'm Luna Lovegood. And nobody would believe me, and then they would believe me, and then they wouldn't believe me, because at that point, it's like the roulette table, right? Like, when it goes between red and black, it's been red 7 times in a row. It's got to be black this time, right?
Yep.
That's not how probability works, kids.
Right. There's no statistical reasoning to define that. No player is due, right? Like, in a baseball game.
Nope. So that one's coming to pre-order, and we're hoping to launch that in June if everything hits like it's supposed to. And then we've got The Walking Dead, Something to Fear, from Derek and Lizzie Funkhauser. You may have heard of those people before.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, maybe just a little.
Maybe too much.
No.
I love those kids. And we're excited about that one because it's kind of got like a co-opetition vibe to it, which is
That's a game that I got to check out at Unplugged. That was like the grand reveal, right? Was Unplugged?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It was our way of saying, hey, Walking Dead fans, come check out board games. This is easy for you to learn. You can sit down, you can play it fast. But for even all of us board gamers, there's enough teeth to the game that you're like, that's enjoyable. This is a great filler game that I can keep this deck of cards in my bag and play almost anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yep. Yeah. We're super hopeful that we can get a chance to take a look at that. I know our writer Nick is a huge Walking Dead fan. So the second he saw that, he's like, Andrew, you got to talk to James. Andrew. Yep.
Well, and I'm really excited because Justin Chan, the artist, is the same artist who did the Golem edition of Century Spice Road,
which is awesome. We have that and love it.
I mean, that art is beautiful. I have no idea why they went with that other boring theme when they had that Golem theme. It's so beautiful. And so that's when I I started working with Justin. He actually did the characters in Sorcerer City for me. And so we kind of developed a little relationship there, and he's a great guy. Mm-hmm. He just moved to Japan though. So it kind of made life tougher to get him to help with artwork, but
yeah, cause you're going to bed when he's getting up and
yeah. But yeah, he did a great job of kind of giving the comic book characters a new nice spin, which Robert doesn't really let happen a whole lot. Like right. He likes to kind of stick to Charlie's artwork and he doesn't want to get off brand. So it literally took me over a year of convincing him to let me have that art to do something different. So yeah, that's the two big ones. Then we're hoping that Sorcerer City will hit right after that. So we're going to go June with the Grim Masquerade. We're going to go July at San Diego Comic-Con with The Walking Dead, Something to Fear. And then we're going to hopefully have everything lined up for Gen Con-ish for Sorcerer City.
Cool.
That seems to – I mean, I think that lines up with, you know, if you're hitting Comic-Con with Walking Dead, that makes sense, right? And then Sorcerer City at the Gamer Convention, like that – You're a smart man, James Hudson.
Well, we're trying. Well, and I owe the fans for Sorcerer City because that was supposed to deliver in January, so we're a bit behind on that.
Right, I hear that.
Well, I'm never going to just rush something out the door to try to hit a deadline. I want when somebody gets something, I want them to be ecstatic when they open the box.
Right,
just like you know. Like David, stupid little things like David from Man vs. Meeple, when he opened his box for Guardian's Call, he got all excited about the finger hole notches in the cardboard inserts because it made them really easy to pull out of the box. Yeah. I mean, we're all dorks. We really enjoy, you know, little things, attention to detail like that. So
right. My thing is is having some way for air to get in so you can actually get the cover off a box.
Oh, sure. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the big one for me. But no, I and you can really tell the people that play a lot of games when it's stuff like that gets them excited.
Right. Guardian's Call was a tough one too, because on the insert, we went back and forth on that one. It was late as well. Sorry, guys. I'm getting better at the whole production line thing, so we'll get that down. But it was late too, because one of the things that the insert is you would punch all the stuff out of the cardboard. You'd put it in its slot and you put the top on it. And if you shook the box or you set it up vertical, a lot of the tokens fell out of their position. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys have that insert that came with like Lords of Waterdeep, but like it irks my soul to open up a board game box and the bits to be everywhere. Cause then that's just like, I'm less likely to play that game if I have to sort it before I can play it. Right. And so, we went back and forth, and it cost us a couple months, but we got that tray just right so that when you put the shell inserts underneath the shell cardboard underneath the insert and you put everything in there and you put it like it's supposed to be and you close the top, you can shake that thing to heaven and it ain't nothing's moving. And I care about those sort of things. We'll see. We'll see if everybody else does.
So I think the Grim Forest was my first introduction to game trays, and all of a sudden I've seen them a lot more in a lot of stock boxes, and I mean I don't know how long they've been around, but the guys over there do an unbelievable job with crafting those things together. I can't imagine what it costs, but like Megaland was an interesting insert from Red Raven because it was a game trays insert, but it had like card slots.
Yeah,
but they gave you a piece of foam to put over the card slot so that when you close the box, the cards didn't like shake out. So that was a pretty interesting way to do that. And then there was another game that the entire game tray was kind of like the way it is in the Grim Forest, where you have those like the kind of the clear plastic covers that help keep things in. So that's another way that I mean I agree with you. I think it's rare for me at this point in my life to open a box and not think, okay, this tray's got to go.
Right.
You know, and so we've got a box of baggies that sits in our, you know, in our Calax.
It sits with the board games. Like, oh, need baggies.
For bad tray situations. So I have a lot of appreciation for the amount of work that goes into making those trays really awesome. So on behalf of gamers everywhere, thank you.
Sure. Absolutely.
So you just had that amazing Druid City / Skybound retreat at a castle, which is ridiculous. I saw that and was instantly jealous.
yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet it was. But so how many projects are in the pipeline at I won't ask you to reveal, you know, secrets, no matter how desperately I want to know them. But how many things you think you've got in the works these days?
I kind of actually went through my debriefing after that week, and we worked on 31 projects at the retreat. Now, obviously, that's years worth of a pipeline worth of games. But yeah, we worked on 31 projects during that week with everybody.
Wow.
It's pretty intense. But it's bringing that many talented people together. Like, if you sit down with John Gilmore for 10 minutes, that guy's got like 150 game designs on a Google Drive. I'm not even kidding.
That's amazing.
He's like, what kind? He'll scroll for like 5 minutes on his little Google Drive. He's like, what you want? What kind of game are you looking for? You know, like,
see, I have one that right. I'm working on.
You have two game ideas.
Yes, two ideas. One that's in active, super slow development.
Hey, it's a process. What I tell everybody is just you got to get it on paper, and then start trying to play it as soon as you possibly can. It develops from there quickly.
Yeah, mine is the game I'm working on is tightly integrated with its theme, and so I'm doing theme research, which I just shouldn't do. I should just get the mechanics down and backfill the theme after the fact. But I'm stupid, so you know.
Well, everybody designs differently, right? Like, the first game I actually designed was Bloodstone, and I started with the art first because that's what inspired me. And so I was contracting an art for a character before I even had many of the mechanics fleshed out. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as I got that character art, that, like, I was like a kid at Christmas. Boom, off the races. I loved it. So, you know, I don't want to – you do want to be efficient. You don't want to waste your time because you only have so much. However, you can't really ignore what actually motivates you and kind of propels you. So, fine line.
I mean, hopefully this is a thing that ever sees the light of day, but we'll see. But
2026.
Yeah, sure. It's the college fund plan.
Maybe. Well,
college fund.
Community college.
Are they going to?
Community college. Maybe Vogue School.
Ain't nobody getting rich making board games.
No, I know. I can only imagine.
That's not to say that you can't make a great living. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying no one drives Lamborghinis in the board game industry. You know, like, this is not the film industry or video games.
Maybe Reiner Kinesia. Maybe.
I don't know. I think that's just because he has literally 662 games.
Yeah. No, you're probably not wrong. Or Klaus Treiber. He's probably doing okay. But listen, one of the big reasons why we wanted to get you on the show was because we're giving away a copy of Guardian's Call, a game published by James Hudson and Druid City Games and Skybound Games.
Yeah.
We have talked about that already. And we thought that it would be super cool if the man who made it all possible helped us decide on the winner of this copy of Guardian's Call. What do you think of that?
Sounds fun to me.
All right. So we have
467 entries.
All right.
Okay.
So go back into your mind palace, if you would.
Yep.
And see if you can come up with a number between 0 and 468.
313.
All right. Well, that was quick. All right. Let's do it. 313.
James Hudson. Woo!
And the winner is Rob Haskness.
Congratulations to Rob. We will reach out to you. Way to go, winning a copy of The Guardian's Call. Thanks for watching our Pod Pledge video. I see that you did that. We really appreciate that. And speaking of Pod Pledge, we would love it if you would take a minute to check out our Pod Pledge and consider whether or not you would like to become part of the family of The Family Gamers. You can check that out at thefamilygamers.com/podpledge. You can see all of our ridiculous family members being ridiculous.
Very true.
So, James.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of ways to get a hold of people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How can people get a hold of you?
Typically, anything that says Druid City Games, that is usually my @ on almost everything, unless you do the Instagram. And then over there, I am James Matthew Hudson, my full name. 2 T's on the Matthew.
Wow.
You can always send me an email at support@druidcitygames. That comes directly to my inbox. be happy to answer questions or help in any way I can.
Cool. And if anybody's been paying attention, James is in the new Call of Duty games, so you have to look out. and don't upset him. No. That was a fantastic Instagram shot of you in front of that sign, though.
You know, I just need to get the tattoos on the side of my head, and I've got my perfect cosplay set up. I'm just ready to go.
Oh, man. So funny. So many amazing things in LA. All right. Anitra, where can people get a hold of us?
Well, you can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, etc., at Family Gamers AA.
Mm-hmm. You can join our Facebook community. Go to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right into the Facebook community where you can share stuff about your family playing games and see what other people in the community are doing. It's a lot of fun in there.
It is. Mm-hmm. You can email us, too.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to our show, tell your friends about our show, and leave us a review at Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and if there's a service you use that we're not on, just let us know and we'll do what we can. All right. Well, that was an awesome time with James. James, thank you again for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Congratulations once more to Rob. All right. So I think that is going to be it for us this week. Until next week, play games with your kids.